No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard Time on this Tuesday, January 10th. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us on this first day of the new legislative session, number 85 for those keeping count. 140, that's the number of days lawmakers will be in session, barring some unforeseen emergency. While we're doing the numbers, here's one that's causing a few people indigestion. $104.87 billion. That's the number of state dollars on hand for legislators to spend, or to try to save if they can. But let's look at a couple of realities. First, that roughly $105 billion, that's almost 3% less than lawmakers thought they would have to spend. Blame the drop on oil revenues, at least in part. This is crucial. Because for all the bathroom bills and other initiatives getting the lion's share of media attention right now, technically, the only thing the Texas legislature must do is pass a budget. How do you do this when you're also facing a crisis in the state's child protective services system, when schools are looking at ongoing money crunches statewide? Ultimately, what does all this add up to for everyday Texans? We're turning to a couple of Lone Star lawmakers who are going to be wrestling with this firsthand. First, State Representative Donna Howard, an Austin Democrat who served on the House Appropriations Committee. Representative Howard, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you.
The legislature will have, it looks like, about 2.5% less state revenue to spread around this session. What's that going to mean for regular Texans as you see it?
Well, certainly, I would suggest that this is self-inflicted, if you will. We knew last session, when we had approximately $4 billion in tax cuts, that the oil and gas industry was going to be slowing down. We would have less revenue coming in. Yet we did pass that and certainly benefited some portions of our population. But that's $4 billion less coming in. That means we have to figure out other ways to fund critical needs of education, health care, and other parts of infrastructure.
Well, given that pot of money is considerably smaller, you mentioned things like child welfare, the troubled child.
Yes.
A foster care system is screaming for attention. A federal judge has declared it unconstitutionally dangerous to kids. You have a school finance system, which has yet to be completely sorted. Not many people happy about that. But you also have proposals on the table like Senate Bill 2, which would cap the amount that local governments could raise taxes without voter approval. Given that you're talking about that in that last case, something that has a low impact immediately on the budget, isn't it more likely that we're going to see action on those sorts of bills than, say, something as big as school finance and trying to reorganize that in 2017?
Well, let me just back up first and say, though we don't have surplus dollars available to us in terms of revenue stream, we do have a very robust Economic Stabilization Fund, which is projected to have approximately $12 billion in it for the next biennium. So we have room to use some of those funds within the Economic Stabilization Fund, and we could do that to achieve the purpose of that fund, which is to help us weather the storm of some downturns as we're regaining momentum, building the economy back up. And the biennial revenue estimate does indicate that we are seeing growth in the future. So this is exactly why that fund was set up. It would prevent us from making unnecessary cuts, and it would help us fund things like the foster care system.
Just so we're on the same page when it comes to what we call this, is this the so-called rainy day fund you're referring to?
It is indeed, but I like to use the real name for it, which is the Economic Stabilization Fund, because I think that conveys what the fund's purpose is.
Ultimately,
which is to stabilize the economy.
Do you think that your colleagues on the other side of the aisle, though, are going to go along with tapping into that? Is this enough of a fiscal crisis to go there?
Well, you know, the fact is that we have been balancing the budget, in my opinion, on the backs of children. We not only have the issue with the foster care system, but we have also recently heard about a large number of special education students not getting their needs met. There are many needs that we could be funding that help children. That may or may not be a crisis to some people, but I think that's a real moral and fiduciary duty we have. So I would suggest that we can use those funds for this purpose.
Representative Howard, as a Democrat in a largely red legislature, what do you hope to advance during this legislative session, or do you find yourself sort of perpetually in the role of defending things that your colleagues, your Republican colleagues, don't support?
Well, actually, I think I look at it more as challenges between the House and the Senate, almost, rather than between Republicans and Democrats.
Because the nature of the place, there's obviously Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who runs the Senate. He has some very sharp sort of social oriented measures here that he's advancing during
Absolutely.
This session.
Absolutely, and I would suggest that those are distractions, keeping us from focusing on the very important things that make a difference in the day-to-day lives of Texans, like public education, affordability of higher education, making sure that we continue to invest in transportation and water and the kinds of things that keep our economy moving forward.
Representative Donna Howard is a Democrat from the Texas Capital City. Representative Howard, thanks so much for speaking with us on The Standard.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to Republican Representative Cindy Burkett of Sunnyvale in North Texas. Representative Burkett, thanks for speaking with The Standard.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here today.
Everyone's talking about the money. $105 billion, a little less, down nearly 3% from earlier projections. One top lawmaker was telling the Texas Tribune that there are obviously going to be cuts to the budget. But where do you cut? Where's the fat?
Well, you know, it kind of moves around every session, and what our different needs are, and it's varied. So we will enter the session, and we'll be looking at a supplemental, obviously, to take care of some bills that came up during the interim. And we'll look at every single need. We've asked the Speaker, the Governor, and Lieutenant Governor several months ago, asked every single agency to submit their legislative appropriations request at 4% less than what they currently have. And, you know, that's below what we're short. You know, we're looking at a revenue shortfall of about 2.7%, if I'm remembering correctly.
Right, right.
And so that gives us a little bit of leeway. And hopefully, you know, sometimes between January and May, we get a little bit more flexibility, you know, as we actually start getting actual numbers in.
I see what you're saying. Now, we were on the phone with Democratic House Member Donna Howard, mm-hmm. and she was suggesting that if there ever were a time to tap into the so-called rainy day fund, now might be it. I mean, the money being there for just these occasions as she sees it. What do you think? Is this the best way to move forward?
Well, you know, the rainy day fund was originally put into place to use for shortfalls in budgets that we have completed. You know, so that's what it's really there for, emergency items. Always our goal is to look within what we actually have to work with, move from there, and see what we've got. So, you know, it's going to be a matter of let's get into the middle of the budget, let's start working through it, see what's needed, and go from there.
I think most people, including the governor, would probably say that what's going on with Child Protective Services right now, for example,
Correct.
Constitutes a genuine emergency. We're talking life or death situation for a lot of kids.
Yes, sir.
Would that be something that would justify lawmakers reaching into that rainy day fund for?
Well, we'll be looking at CPS, obviously. You're probably aware we did an additional budget for them,
yes.
or additional monies for them to bring some of our caseworkers who are very hardworking and well-deserved up to a better salary,
mm-hmm.
and that'll be covered in a supplemental. And then, again, we'll look as we go into the appropriations legislative, the LAR's legislative appropriations request, to see what's needed and go from there. The downside to using rainy day fund money for anything that's an ongoing budget requirement,
mm-hmm.
i.e. salaries of any sort, and not strictly for emergency situations, infrastructure or tornadoes, et cetera, is that it'll quickly be eaten down. And you started, you know, using your quote savings, and then what happens when you get to the end of it? So obviously we'll be looking at all areas of the budget to see where we can adjust accordingly and get our most urgent needs taken care of first. CPS is obviously one of them. Education will be there. Our infrastructure is always important. And Medicaid and education are 75% of our budget.
Medicaid and education,
75% of our budget. So everything else you can think of that has to do with what the state provides to our citizens as far as services, whether it's roads and parks or security on the border or whatever, has to come out of the remaining fourth.
Representative, I believe we just got back from Brownsville, and so this is sort of weighing heavy on our thought right now. I think the Department of Public Safety is asking for something like $1 billion just to be budgeted for border security.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense in this economic climate?
Well, that's kind of a carryover from last session because D.C. was not carrying through with their responsibilities to protect our border, and we were having some issues with cartel and some other important safety.
Does that change under a President Trump, perhaps?
Hopefully it will. You know, we put in an additional billion. The state of Texas put in $900 million last session to put an additional, I think we ended up with 250 DPS officers on the border. And that made not only the border more safe, but the rest of the state more safe because we had been filling in with DPS officers from around the state.
Republican Cindy Burkett, representing House District 113 in North Texas, speaking with us on this first day of the 85th legislative session.